Calling Grass Nation. We are conducting an audience survey at gum.fm/touchgrass. And we want to hear from you so that we can keep making content you love.
You know this. We know this. There are ads on our podcast. Mm-hmm. We want to improve that experience. But in order to do so, we need to know a little bit more about you, our audience. This survey is quick, easy, and a free way to support this podcast. It'll take 2 minutes and you'll be helping us out so much by doing it.
Yes, so go to gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our audience survey. That's gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our survey. Thank you for using your precious time online to help us with our podcast.
We love you.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
You got mail.
Hi, I'm Elise Morales.
And I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is
Go Touch Grass,
the podcast where we log in
so you can log off.
Millie and I are two chronically online comedians, and on this pod, we break down the week in internet discourse, viral memes, TikTok trends, and niche influencer drama so that you can go do literally anything else.
And if you like what you hear today and want to hear more, we got a Go Touch Grass Patreon already up with tons more weekly content, access to our Discord community, and our spinoff series, Search History, where we go back and break down a viral discourse from the past.
We got a hot one coming up soon, so sign
up now. The many beefs of Azalea Banks. If you want to hear why Azalea Banks is beefing from a nuanced party, here we go, baby. I'm gonna be walking through Elise with all the beefs.
Yes, our $10 patrons got to vote on it, and that'll be coming out soon, so get signed up so you can hear it. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review. We love reviews. We need more of them. But the best review you can give us is to tell your friends about the podcast. Tag us in a little story. We'll repost it. You know that we're online.
We'll repost everything. Not to be a Sabrina Carpenter about it, but please, please, please.
Please, please, please. Please. Yes. You know, there have been times where we've been tagged in a post and I reposted so quickly, I don't even realize that Millie's already reposted it. So we'll repost it twice. We'll repost it for every post we've got.
Listen, we got you. We're on there. And it's us. It's us. We're running. Yeah. We're running.
No one's running that account but us. I do. Yes. It is funny when we're DMing. I'm like, should I reveal which one of us the person that we're DMing with is talking to? Usually we'll reveal at some point.
I will do it. Like, if I use a black hands emoji, I do let them know that it's really talking.
And I do appreciate that. I do appreciate that because I don't need that on me.
Yeah, no, you don't need that smoke.
It is the one, there's like the white hands emoji and then there's the one shade darker.
But darker
hands emoji.
Yeah,
That's me.
That's fair. That's fair. There's emoji discourse. Yeah. Of course. There's an emoji discourse because there's some white people, there's some even Asian people, like East Asian people, very beautiful porcelain skin that are using emojis darker than I use. And I'm like, what is going on there?
I think when in doubt, yellow.
Go lighter. Yellow. Okay.
When in doubt, go lighter for sure. But when in doubt, like yellow, you can always do the Simpsons version. It's always there. Sometimes the best choice is no choice.
Yeah.
And you can do that yourself.
That's fair.
Guys, if you can't tell, it's just Millie and I today. We are
no guest.
We're recording virtually, if you can even believe it. And we're gonna go through a bunch of different topics because we've got time to kiki, chit chat, etc.
Yeah, we don't have the dead weight of a guest.
All of our guests are amazing. We love our
all
guests
of our
so
guests
much.
Are so amazing. It's perfect in every way. But we can go into more things because
we don't have to like ask someone else their opinion.
Yeah.
And hear it. And listen and be good.
This is a podocracy. This is not a podocracy.
Yeah.
Cheerocracy, that's a bring it on reference.
This is sometimes a podocracy, but today
podunism.
But today it's a podtatorship.
Podtatorship. Where we're
let us know. We're workshopping that. We're workshopping that.
Yeah, we're workshopping that.
First things first, I did want to give an update because on our last episode, we talked all about the demure trend as originated by Jules LeBron. And our grasshole last week was demure haters, two demure haters specifically. And I want to retroactively add someone to last week's grasshole umbrella before we begin. Specifically, some random asshole in Washington State named Jefferson Bates, who filed to get the trademark very mindful, very demure, right out from under Jules LeBron. So Jules LeBron had not filed that trademark. She posted a now deleted video of herself crying that honestly broke my heart, where she was like crying. And she was saying she felt like she dropped the ball by not knowing to like file for this trademark sooner, and like talking about how much she works for her social media. We already talked about how like she was able to fund the rest of her transition. She wanted to help her family. And I think she was just feeling, that feeling that it's not right, but I think she was feeling like dumb or like she fucked up. I mean, she said she dropped the ball. That's what she felt. Luckily, a bunch of trademark lawyers have come on and said like she can and should still file the trademark, and they're not necessarily like awarded on first come first serve basis. So she has obviously a pretty good case to, just because this guy filed it doesn't mean he gets that trademark. So yeah, hopefully she gets it.
Yeah, and I couldn't find anything on Jefferson Bates, but apparently he just does this all the time. And there could be an argument if it was like just demure, like trademarking demure, but very mindful, very demure is specifically Jules. It's fucked up, and Jefferson Bates is a loser.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where, again, it like reeks of, obviously, I don't know shit about Jefferson Bates, but Jefferson Bates in Washington State, it's giving white man with time on his hands.
Yeah, no, he's white. Yeah, that's what I've heard. He's white and rich.
Yeah, you can use the law to put out a bunch of trademarks and steal shit out from under people. And then someone who is a trans person of color who is suddenly launched into enormous catchphrase-based stardom doesn't immediately lock that trademark up. And it's like, it just reeks of how the system is designed for people who already know how to work within it to like reap the benefits, and someone who's usually on the outside who doesn't know necessarily like, oh shit, I better get on my trademark right fucking now before some random man who has nothing to fucking do with this scoops it up. That just sucks.
It sucks, and it's also like, she's busy. She's been doing a lot of stuff. Like, she's meeting people. She was on, like, RuPaul had her, I think took over Jimmy Kimmel's desk or something like that, and she was on RuPaul. Like, she's really doing a lot and, like, really taking this moment and hasn't had a second to pause, and I can totally, so it's just mean-spirited and fucked up, but I'm glad that she can still save it and
It seems like she can still get the trademark for herself, and I am hoping that that's what happens. So that's our update. We have added Jefferson Bates to last week's grasshole retroactively. Now, I would like to do a new edition of our new segment, E-Dictionary, where we debuted demure last week.
Yeah.
And we are going to talk about a new phrase that is in the zeitgeist. This phrase is homie hopping.
Oh gosh.
So, according to Urban Dictionary, a homie hopper is a person who has sexual interactions with two or more people who are all friends. Before we get into the reason why this is being discussed, Millie, do you have thoughts on homie hopping generally? I know we discussed it on a recent other podcast that we were on, but let's bring it to Grass Nation.
Yeah, I feel like what I said on the other pod was like, you know, you can do whatever you want, but it has consequences. I feel like the consequences are severely lessened if, for example, homie, like the friends, it's been years since they dated. How seriously were you dating? Did you just hook up with one and then you're seriously dating another? Like, Are you guys all in the same industry or career? There's a lot of case by case basis things. So there's not a blanket, is it right or is it wrong? But just know, like, yeah, people are, you know, there are consequences to all your actions. What say you about homie hopping, Elise?
What say I feel similarly. I think that the morality of the homie hop depends on the details. So, like, yes, if this is your best friend and her and this guy just broke up and he cheated on her and suddenly you're, like, sliding into his DMs, that's not, like, that's fucked up. You're fucked up for that. If it's, like, someone who's part of your wider social circle, maybe you know them, it was a normal breakup, it's been some time, the person who's their ex might not like you. Like you said, like, there might be a consequence in that, like, that if you were friendly with them before, you might not be as friendly with them after. But I don't think it's, like, morally wrong or whatever to date within a friend group, depending. There are also friend groups in this world that are very incestuous. I've never been part of one of those friend groups, but sometimes you meet people and I'm like, all these people fucked.
Well, isn't that the whole premise of The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives? Coming on Hulu or what is it, Freeform in 2 weeks or something like that?
Yeah, I'm like, if you can make it work, I guess. I will say that this discourse did remind me that when I first started dating Danny, my previous ex sent me a long message, nasty, mean message, that was like, really? You're going to date someone who hosts the improv jam that I attend?
Okay.
I was like, yeah, okay. I'm going to date him and fuck him too. So,
yeah.
Like,
wow.
You do
host
not get
the improv
that.
Jam that I attend. Did he attend like, it frequently? Wow.
He did attend it frequently. I will say he was there every week.
All right. Okay. Elise. but again, you know, whatever, whether it's fucked up or not. Like, also, if it's like, I mean, clearly it was a match and you guys did get married. So, like, whatever, you know, is the juice worth the squeeze? I love that. So the juice was worth the squeeze.
The juice was worth the squeeze.
The ex could be quiet, yeah.
But it did just remind me because I was like, okay, well, how does it count as a homie hop if he hosts an improv jam?
Are you homies if you host an improv jam? That's a question only between you and the other 500 white people that do improv.
Yeah, that's a question between you and Del Close, the improv.
And Del Close, yeah. And then Del Close will be like, why are you talking to me? You're a woman.
Okay, so the reason that homie hopping is in the lexicon right now, we'll keep this short because these are a bunch, again, this is just like a bunch of random, very pretty white people that we've never heard of in our lives.
Yeah.
Whatever. But it is because of a love triangle between the influencers Hallie Kate, Sophia LaCourte, and a man named Reed Williams, who looks just like kind of any guy.
Jesus, of course.
TLDR on this is that Hallie and Reed dated for 9 months. They split in November of 2023. 1 month later, Sophia LaCourte is seen out on a date with Reed in NYC. Hallie posted some now deleted TikToks at the time saying that she was sad that her friend dated her ex so quickly. But ultimately, those TikToks get deleted. Hallie and Reed got back together. The drama was, yes. So Hallie and Reed are together now.
Wow.
The drama then reignited this week after Reed appeared on an episode of the podcast Delusional Diaries. That episode has now been deleted, in which fans thought he seemed disinterested in Hallie. So I guess, I don't know, I guess he came off weird. I did not see clips of this. And again, they've deleted the podcast episode, but that's what I guess reignited some of this. And then shit really blew up when Sophia LaCourte shared her side of the story in a 3-part TikTok series titled How I Got Canceled by a Girl I Met Maybe 3 Times. And I think we should watch this clip. She now has a viral sound from it.
Oh my goodness. Some of you guys are acting like I drop kicked someone's puppy. I went on a date with a guy that was single. I guess the paparazzi cared and was commenting on his ex-girlfriend's stuff. Commenting on her post saying that me, Sophie LaCour, was with her ex-boyfriend. His ex-girlfriend texts me and says, "Hi, this is Hallie," because she knows I don't have her number because we're not friends. "I'm getting DMs that you were on a date with my ex last night." Oh my gosh. "I'm so sorry. I didn't know you owned him. He wasn't wearing a collar."
Jesus okay, Christ. So the collar line is now a viral sound. Yeah. How does this clip make you feel? Because I have thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, this girl seems like a huge bitch. I don't know. I'm like, it's just very like, we were just talking about last time how you can tell on other platforms if something is going to go viral or not. And TikTok is the lottery, but I'm like, you have to know that TikTok is so girls right now. That's like the culture is very girl. So this is not girl. You have to know that like people were not going to be fucking with this.
Yeah, it's interesting because I actually feel like the details she gives falls under like a potentially acceptable homie hop to me, and that it's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess this girl didn't have her number, whatever. But her vibe is so rancid in the clip that I'm on Hallie Kate's side immediately, because I'm just like, the way she talks, it's like, it's not even a current mean girl. It's like an 80s cheerleader mean girl. It's like vintage mean girl accent that like, I didn't realize he was wearing a collar. And like, she's very, the energy on it is so bad that I'm like, I actually don't even care about the details. Like, I don't like you at all.
Yeah, it's like, you can't see. Listen, technically it's fine, but it's like, you can't see why someone who thought you guys were friends or like, at least you met and had a few nice interactions with them wouldn't be a little upset about this. Like, okay, she didn't have your number, but she could get it easily because you have very close friends of friends. Like,
yeah, and also it's just like, I mean, why are you telling this story? Did this girl really get you canceled?
Yeah, you got yourself canceled.
It seems like other people just noticed you were out with her boyfriend, and then probably, my guess, I don't know what Reddit this all happened on, but my guess is the NYC influencer snark Reddit was like, oh, look, these two people are out, and they know each other, and then people are commenting, and first of all, I like that she refers to it as paparazzi. It's not paparazzi.
No, it's like a friend. Yeah, that's insane. Paparazzi, it's like no one knows who you are. And also, it was like people who know, like,
NYC Sophia. Influencers.
Yeah,
like people who could clock this drama were chit-chatting about it online. But I don't think you were canceled. It seems like this other girl, Hallie Kate, has not been talking about you. Her and the guy are back together. Like, why are you doing this? And why are you being so mean?
Yeah. And it was like, hey guys, just to clarify, like, blah, blah, blah. But the vibe is off. Fuck you.
So now you guys know, if you hear the phrase homie hopping, that's what's going on. If you hear the names Hallie Kate and, oh, I love the part where she goes, and they're saying me, Sophia LaCour. Like the way she says
it. Yeah, exactly. And if you hear the audio, "I hate that ginger bitch," this is also in reference to that. Like that's a different influencer saying she hates that little ginger bitch. Yeah.
So there are a couple different audios that you are now made aware of, and that's e-dictionary for today.
Yes.
Now you're more educated. Should we get into the discourse?
We should.
Millie's laughing because this is a big discourse that has been discoursing for a while. It is time for us, for Go Touch Grass Pod, to wade into the It Ends With Us drama.
Oh my God.
It's time. The dust has kind of settled on this drama, so I feel like now is a good time for us to do a retrospective on what has taken place. If you're online at all, you've probably noticed that Blake Lively is being dragged to hell and back for being rude in interviews and to fans. Mm. But this all started with the press tour for her new film, It Ends With Us. So I have organized this into four narrative phases.
Okay.
Five narrative phases that I feel that this... And they say
we don't do storytelling on this pod.
We do storytelling. We do research. We're doing it all.
Oh my gosh, okay? We're doing it all.
You guys don't even know to what degree we're doing it all.
Listen.
Let me say that.
But anyway, let's talk about this five fucking point narrative art that you've done for this online drama.
Okay. So we'll start with the background. It Ends With Us is a very, very popular 2016 novel by the author Colleen Hoover about a steampunk florist named Lily Blossom Bloom. The novel flashes between Lily's past, growing up in an abusive household. It's told via letters her teenage self wrote to Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh my God.
I read this book. I'll give my opinion on it in a second. And it's also about the connection she made with a fellow abused teen named Atlas Corrigan. And then her present day relationship with a man named Ryle Kincaid, who also turns out to be physically abusive. So, like I said, I did read this book. I did think it was bad. And I don't have highbrow taste. I'm reading Fourth Wing right now. That's a book about dragons and people who fuck. Like, I don't...
Wait, people who fuck dragons?
Well, okay. So you bond to a dragon. And if your dragon is fucking another dragon, then you might find that you want to fuck the person who is bonded to that dragon.
Honestly, isn't this 101 Dalmatians, basically?
It's exactly like 101 Dalmatians.
I have a question. I guess two things. One, how was she steampunk? The steampunk florist got me.
So she's steampunk in that, like, her floral designs are described as, like, kind of, like, alty, and, like, that she uses, like, black and, like, metals, and, like, that she's, like, a florist for people who doesn't like flowers.
Okay.
That's kind of how it's described. Yeah.
Okay. And then, cool. Not what steampunk is, but okay. Because I'm like, is she wearing a top hat? Is she wearing monocles? Okay.
No, unfortunately, no. She's not steampunk.
Interesting. And then, okay, I've seen a lot of memes of, like, I blame Ellen for this. And now I know it's because it's all centered around... But I will say, to be fair, if this was published in 2016, it was probably written in 2014, 2015. And Ellen was top of culture for that. So
yeah, I think, and this is a theory that I did see floated on TikTok that I believe, that Colleen Hoover created this narrative structure where all the flashbacks are letters... addressed to Ellen because the teenage version of Lily loves Ellen. And then also her and this guy say, just keep swimming to each other, like, a lot.
Oh.
I think it is insane. Number one, it's insane. But I think that she was trying to get on Ellen by creating this narrative thing where it's like, okay, my book's going to pop off and then Ellen will find out that she's a big part of the book and then I'm going to be on Ellen, which again, like you said, 2016, there's no bigger couch to sit on than Ellen's.
Did she go on Ellen? Because I'm like,
no.
That's crazy because it didn't take much. In 2016, if you wanted to get on Ellen, all you had to do was like lip sync Nicki Minaj or like wear cool shoes. Like, it didn't take much, I feel like.
I feel like a steampunk florist could get on Ellen. A steampunk florist.
And then my third question is, okay, can you get specifically of like what was bad about the book?
I really do not like her writing style. I found the writing style to be very corny. I think And we'll get into this with the discourse. I think the story is fundamentally fucked up. Okay. The way it handles domestic violence is very weird to me. The mm-hmm. The line, "It ends with us," is basically like Lily, spoilers for "It Ends With Us," gets pregnant with her abuser's baby. And then mm-hmm. she decides, like, okay, I'm going to end the cycle of abuse. But then in the sequel, because I did actually read the sequel, even though I did not like the original book.
Okay.
Because I do these things to myself. She's like co-parenting the baby with him.
Okay. And I'm like,
no, this isn't right.
Yeah.
This guy needs to like go to prison.
Yeah.
Like, this okay. is not.
Wow.
So it's very weird. And at the time, the book was marketed as a love story with a twist, but the twist is domestic violence. Like the Jesus guy that you Christ. Think that she's going to be in love with is, yeah. And then, yeah, I would just say the writing style, the characterizations, it just, none of it hit for me. But this book was super duper popular on Book Talk.
Yeah, and also things being good or not doesn't not mean that it's not popular, you know?
Exactly. And I'll read a bad book that's popular all day long. I don't think that like everything needs to be highbrow. This just Colleen Hoover yeah. did not hit for me, I will say. I think she kind of glamorized the domestic violence in ways that I didn't love, but this book is an early example of a book that like got really popular specifically because of Book Talk and because people were really loving it on Book Talk. So it's an early example.
Or the Book Talk community predating TikTok.
I think they did pick it up. I guess like, is TikTok going in 2016? Probably not. But I know. But Colleen Hoover, her popularity
skyrocketed
when people on Book Talk started talking about her. So Justin Baldoni, mm-hmm. the actor who played Raphael in Jane the Virgin.
Team Raphael.
He acquired the rights to the book from Colleen Hoover in 2019. So I think that maybe the pathway is that book comes out in 2016. It's doing fine. TikTok starts popping off. Book Talk starts popping off. The book starts popping off on Book Talk. And Justin Baldoni pretty quickly gets the rights.
I feel like he probably got the rights before it popped off on Book Talk.
Or like pretty simultaneous. Like I think he saw writing on the wall and was like, I'm going to scoop this up. Because Colleen Hoover in general is like she's a popular but controversial Book Talk figure in general. And this is her like biggest book.
Okay.
So he gets the rights, his production company gets the rights, he's going to direct and star as Ryle Kincaid, the abusive mm-hmm. man. And then Blake Lively gets attached to play Miss Lily Blossom Bloom. So,
okay.
We all hear about this movie. I actually auditioned to play a waiter in this movie, did not get it, but well, the line was literally like, here's your soup. Like, it was not...
Well,
it didn't happen for me, but maybe it's a good thing because it seems like the set was stressful.
Yeah.
But the drama with the movie starts with the press tour. So this is like a very highly anticipated release in general because of the popularity of the book, because of the star power behind it, the Blake Lively of it all, the Justin Baldoni. People are excited for this movie to come out. And fans start to notice that Justin Baldoni appears to be doing all of his press kind of separately from the cast. Like he's appearing at different events. And then at the New York premiere, theories really start rolling when everyone notices that like it's Justin Baldoni is like taking pictures with his wife and the rest of the cast is taking pictures together. But nobody is talking to or interacting with Justin Baldoni at all in any of this stuff. So that brings us to narrative phase one. What did Justin Baldoni do? Everyone starts being like, well, clearly something's up. Why is everyone in the cast not talking to him? He must have done something. And this really pops off after a video of Jenny Slate, who plays Ryle Kincaid's sister, who becomes like Lily's best friend. She's asked on the red carpet, like, what was it like to work with Justin Baldoni? And she avoids the question. She basically says, like, it's so crazy to have two jobs, directing and acting. That's crazy. I loved the movie. Like, she doesn't
answer the question. Yeah.
And people start really speculating at this point. They're like, what did this guy do that no one's talking to him? They also notice that while he is following everyone in the cast and Colleen Hoover, none of the cast or Colleen Hoover are following him. Mm-hmm. And they were following him in the past. So a mass unfollowing of Justin Baldoni also appears to have taken place. So people also start pretty quickly comparing this to the Don't Worry, Darling drama, mm-hmm. which was around the movie Don't Worry, Darling. In that, like, Olivia Wilde was kind of, she was like the director villain of that story. Mm-hmm. So people are very quickly being like, oh, Justin Baldoni must have done something. Justin mm-hmm. Baldoni, what did he do? Simultaneously with the film's release, negative stories start to come out about Justin in Page Six. So someone leaks to Page Six that Justin Baldoni made Blake Lively feel uncomfortable about her postpartum body. Mm-hmm. It will later be revealed that the full story about this is that he asked someone on set to ask Blake her weight because he has a lower back injury and needed to train for a scene where he picked her up. So take that.
Yeah, she tried to say that it was fat shaming.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like the most sensitive thing you can do.
Yeah, it seems like a real situation, but where we are in the narrative phase one is all we know is that he made her feel uncomfortable about her body. Mm-hmm. Later, it will come out that the actual circumstances. There are also rumors that he lingered too long in a kiss and Blake didn't like it, which is also interesting when you find out, okay, actually there was an intimacy coordinator on set and Blake was like part of that. So the narrative that is coming out, clearly someone is leaking negative stuff about Justin Baldoni to Page Six. In this article, it also says that he was extremely difficult on set, with one person saying, it's not just Blake, added the industry source. None of the cast enjoyed working with Justin and they certainly didn't talk to him at the premiere. So,
okay.
That's where we are. But now we enter narrative phase two, which I'm calling, wait, maybe it's Blake who sucks. So,
okay.
So, increased scrutiny on the press tour leads people to watch more of these press tour interviews, right? And people start realizing that Baldoni and Lively have very different demeanors when they are promoting this film. Baldoni is like very strictly on message about this being a movie about domestic violence. He's very respectful of the subject matter. He speaks very highly of Blake. He is on message. And mm-hmm. that message is, this is a movie about domestic violence and like what, how that affects a person.
A message that I really liked that he said, not just about the domestic violence, but like, he really wanted to show the charisma of an abuser and like show that there is love there and like all that stuff. It's obviously not enough and you shouldn't accept it, but like just like those nuances of a, you know, that he feels like is left out of a domestic abuse story. So that was something that he talked about that I really liked.
Yeah. And he also had another good interview where he's like, what do you want men to take away from this film? And he was like, I want that men to stop asking, why did she stay? So he seems very on message to what this film is about. Meanwhile, Blake Lively is like using it to promote her new hair care line that's coming out. She, when the domestic violence gets referenced, she like really pushes it to the side. She talks about it at all. And in a now infamous promo, she tells women,
It Ends With Us is in theaters now. So grab your friends, wear your florals, and head out to see it.
And is just promoting it in this way that is very like it's a rom-com
mm-hmm.
and like it's going to be like a fun girls' day out. And it is not. It's an intense movie about a lot of abuse. People are also start finding it odd the way like Ryan Reynolds shows up to the premiere and is with Hugh Jackman and he's doing his whole shtick that they do. And She's got Britney Spears' dress on, and she did a bunch of promotional tie-ins with the film. Like, she did It Ends With Us themed cocktails using her alcohol brand, Betty Buzz, and Ryan Reynolds' Aviation American Gin. So, like, they have, like, branded cocktails that are, like, rile on rye, and it's like, that's a domestic abuser. Like,
yeah,
naming a cocktail
At their like premiere parties and stuff, they have themed cocktails. Yeah,
yeah. And also a clip comes out where Blake is doing an interview with the other male actor, the one who plays Atlas Corrigan, and she basically gets asked by the interviewer, hey, you know, this film deals with some pretty intense subject matter. Some people might really respond to the film, basically saying, like, what would you say to a victim of domestic violence who wants to talk to you about the film? How should they go about approaching you about that subject matter? And she's super dismissive of the question. And she's like, what, should I just share my location with them? Maybe they can hop in my car and come back to my house with me. Like, she just doesn't engage with the question really at all. Yeah. And behaves in a very shitty manner. So people start seeing this and a new narrative starts to form. This new narrative, wait, what if Blake Lively sucks? Because it starts to come out that, like, Justin Baldoni got the rights to this film and he had a very specific vision for the film where it was actually centered around the DV. Blake had a different vision, more in line with Colleen Hoover's original love story with a twist vibe from 2016. And it seems like she wanted to use this movie to kind of launch herself into the rom-com space, which isn't what the movie is.
Mm-hmm.
She also reportedly commissioned her own cut of the film, and we actually don't know which of the two cuts is what we're seeing in theaters right now. It comes out in an interview that Ryan Reynolds wrote one of the scene where her character like has a meet cute with Justin Baldoni. So people start being like, okay, why is Ryan Reynolds so involved in this?
Mm-hmm.
She also chose all the music and costuming for the movie, which some people have said were jarring and out of place. Like, I guess there's a scene where it like zooms in on her red bottoms and it's like, why does a florist
have red bottoms? Yeah.
Like, why, what's going on?
Like, she sourced a lot of the items from her like personal closet, which is like designer luxury items that a florist in Boston would never own.
Yeah, it's very strange. And I will say that the character, like, as far as what I remember from the book, she's not like a fashion girly.
No.
She.
And yeah. Well, I have friends. My really good friend Lydia is a really talented florist. And she, when she's working her flower job, she's wearing all black. She has a tool belt. She has to, like.
And a little top hat jeans. And all her steampunk.
Well, yeah. I'm like. Yeah. Like, I think in the story or whatever, but it's like, it's a very like manual physical job. Like, you know, you're not really like wearing designer. You're not really wearing red bottoms. Any like, it's not a just, you're on your feet a lot. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
The outfits themselves are also bizarre.
Crazy, yeah.
It's all strange. And people have said that like, she really pushed for a lot of like inclusion of like pop music moments that Justin Baldoni didn't want, and people who have seen the movie said felt out of place. I haven't actually seen the movie, so I can't say one way or another if the soundtrack hits or not. But people start realizing, okay, this is actually weird. This press tour is really weird. People start having a lot of problems with the way the press tour is going, the way the movie's being advertised.
One more thing about the press tour is that a lot of the press also was done by Ryan Reynolds. And there's this super cringy thing where they interview the guy who plays Atlas. I forgot his name. Brandon, yes, I think.
Brandon Sklenar.
Sklenar. So basically the whole thing is like, Ryan gets his mom to interview, like the promo for it is like a bit where Ryan is basically trying to get his mom to fuck Brandon Sklenar. So it's like completely inappropriate. Like, it could be seen as like a funny, quirky thing if it was a rom-com, but it's just like not, I don't know, like, you could definitely get like a panel of women who survived domestic violence. And the whole wear your florals thing too, kind of, they wanted it to be like Barbenheimer with Deadpool, yes, and Wolverine, and also having this at the same time. And this could be the girly movie while Deadpool and Wolverine was the boy movie, quote unquote. So it's a lot of very misguided stuff that I feel like Ryan Reynolds took part in and took the ways. And last thing, mm-hmm, is that the scene that Ryan Reynolds wrote allegedly was during the strike,
I did not hear that.
Yeah, it was written during the strike, and they had workshops. Like, they workshopped it where they had people read and do whatever and like got feedback. So it's like, you, when during the strike, it's not only like writers aren't allowed to write, but also like you're definitely not allowed to get shit workshopped. And also, you're like taking things from union writers and also like costuming is a union job. So they've also been thrown under the bus for union busting.
That is a very interesting point. I did not know that about the strike. So basically, at this point, Blake Lively quickly posts some Instagram stories about domestic violence and like the National Domestic Violence Hotline. Meanwhile, Justin Baldoni has had that as like his link in bio this entire time. The narrative is shifting now into phase three, which I call, okay, fuck Blake Lively. So now people are like not into Blake Lively, very much feeling pro Justin Baldoni. And this is where the narrative really starts to just turn on her as a person. Because before it was like the entire press tour of this is fucked up. And there was a lot of smoke for Colleen Hoover as well. And now people are like, wait, Blake Lively actually sucks. So it is in this environment that Norwegian journalist Kirsty Flaw, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that properly.
We're doing our best.
My best to Kirsty Flaw. Posts a clip of an interview she did with Lively and Parker Posey in 2016 for their film Cafe Society.
Directed by Woody Allen.
Directed by Woody Allen. That she says made her want to like quit interviewing people altogether. This clip, I'm not going to play it here, but it's pretty viral. You can find it. But in the clip, basically, it starts out with the interviewer congratulating Blake on, she says, oh, congratulations on your little bump. Blake had just announced her pregnancy. It's not a secret pregnancy. It's not like, it's not an unknown pregnancy. She is publicly pregnant for, I think, maybe the third or fourth time. And Blake responds, well, congrats on your little bump, which is very weird. And also, the interviewer later revealed that she's actually like infertile, like she can't have children. So that really hurt. And also, it was just like weird because she was just like, oh, can I not congratulate you on like a known pregnancy? Like, I'm just saying congrats on your pregnancy that's like out there. So the interviewer continues to go on. She asked Blake Lively about the costumes in the film. And Blake pulls a, I wonder if a man would ever get those questions. And it's like, well, yeah, if it's about the costumes in the film. Like I bet Ryan Reynolds gets asked about the Deadpool costume.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... Here's what I'll say, is that I think what all of this has revealed to me is that Blake Lively is one of those pretty rich, usually white women who misunderstands what feminism is, and they, like, get the contours of the debate, but they don't actually understand what it is. So she's like, would you ever ask a man that? And it's like, well, yeah, because we're talking about the costumes of your film. We're not saying you're on the red carpet and all the men are being asked about their process and the women are only asked about what they're wearing. That's what that conversation was about. Not about you're being interviewed about a film and this person asked you about the costume.
But exactly. It's like, when you're so rich and like, it's not to say that because you're rich or white, you don't experience misogyny. But it's like, it's so deeply misguided, and you take every little uncomfortable question as misogyny. It's like you're completely misunderstanding the point.
Yeah, it's like, that it's that thing that honestly Blake's good friend Taylor Swift has done in the past, where it's like misogyny is someone being mean to me or someone asking me a question that I don't like. And again, it's like she thinks fat shaming is him asking someone to ask her her weight so that he can make sure he can lift her because of a lower back injury. That's not him being like, you're fat.
Yeah, she thinks fat shaming, exactly. Like, she thinks misogyny is asking her about clothes and fat shaming is asking her about her weight, when an example of fat shaming would be like if she's eating a muffin and he's like, you better put that down, I have to pick you up earlier. Like,
yeah,
that'd be fat shaming. If she tries to talk about her acting or the process and she and the interviewer just keeps going, but how are the clothes? Are you look so... That would be, you know, but exactly, misguided, misintention, displaced anger, you know, on people.
Yeah.
And it's like, also, there's just a whole group of people who, like, if they know they can get away with being shitty to people, they'll do it.
And that's very much the vibe of this interview clip. And honestly, it's disappointing to see how Parker Posey acts in that interview, too, because it's both of them. Basically, they start just ignoring the interviewer, they're only talking to each other, they won't look at her, and they only the only times they really address her are to like make fun of her questions.
Yeah.
And it just gives people a very, again, to go back to that girl, Sophia LaCourte, just this mean girl energy that I think really triggers people. I saw one creator on TikTok talking about it in this way of like, it's this very specific way that women will be mean where you can't even really describe it. Like, you go home and just be like, they were being really mean to me at school. They were not talking to me or looking at me when they talked, and they were just like giggling a bunch. And people can be like, oh, maybe you misinterpreted it. But then you see it and you're like, no, they're being really nasty to this woman.
I know. I mean, I talked to her face. Yeah, I've definitely, you know, I had incidents like that at my college reunion. And again, like when I was younger, I'm like, it would take me like some time to be like, were they being mean? But now I recognize it. And I'm like, no, we're not doing this. Like, you're not going to make a comment about my outfit, or you're not going to whatever, you know?
Oh, but I have one from high school that sticks in my head so clearly, of this girl being like, hey, Elise, we were all just talking and we were wondering, like, how do you get your hair like that? I was wearing my hair.
Because you had
curly.
The emo. Oh.
I had the emo hair and it was also like curl. I was wearing it curly at the time. Mm. I don't think it looked good, but it was also during a time where like pin straight hair was very much the vibe. And she said it. She said it in such a bitchy way, and like all of her friends were standing behind her and they were all like, but if you describe it, this girl's just asking me how I do my hair.
Yeah,
but
there's the that plausible plausible deniability.
Yeah, the
thing.
Energy of it was so clear to me that it was her being like, we've all been talking about how your hair looks like shit. But if I described what had been said, she
people
was complimenting me, actually. So that's the vibe of this clip.
Yes.
And
I totally get that. Also, like, thank you for the cultural context of, like, in Miami, when I was in high school, everyone would have their bangs straight and the rest of the hair curly. They would just straighten their bangs and then have the rest of the hair curly. So that wasn't, like, a thing for me at all, yeah.
I will say that if you wanted to wear your hair curly in Northern Virginia in 2005, it had to be that the crunchiest, hardest, wet curl that you feel like you could break the hair into. That was socially acceptable. I was not doing that. I was trying to do like a manic pixie dream girl. My hair is, I think it did look bad. But she was a bitch for saying that.
No, she was a bitch. No, she was a bitch.
That girl
listen,
was being
I get it. I'm really can't picture this hair, but I get. Yeah. No, she was.
And she was on the cheerleading team, and she was in her uniform, and her name was Michelle. So she was giving. She was giving enormous bitch.
Yeah. Fuck Michelle. Anyway, back to Blake, the Michelle of Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. Back to to this Michelle. So now we reach a mini. I would say this is a mini narrative. Narrative phase four. Oh, okay. Before we get to narrative phase four, actually. So all of this opens the floodgates. Now tons of clips are being dropped of Blake being rude in interviews, being rude to fans on the red carpet. One comes out where a fan tries to give her a friendship bracelet because she's best friends with Taylor Swift. And so I guess the fan thinks Blake Lively also wants a friendship bracelet. And Blake's like, I'll wear it later. Thanks. Like all these...
That's so... Like, just throw it away later.
Just throw it away later. I am also like... I mean, Blake Lively is obviously not going to put on the friendship bracelet you gave her on the red carpet with her outfit, but you got to play it a little nicer.
Yeah, axe, Blake.
Exactly, but she's not very good at that. Sorry.
Well,
people also start dredging up old Gossip Girl rumors that she was a nightmare on the set of that show. A clip comes out of, hilariously enough, Armie Hammer basically being like, Blake Lively got me fired off the set of Gossip Girl, which I am kind of like... I mean, Armie Hammer.
Broken clock, but also.
Yeah, I'm like that. I don't feel like that's the worst thing she's ever done. It's difficult to say that she was wrong for getting Armie Hammer's role reduced on Gossip Girl. But this is the nature of like just everything is being dug up now. Every clip that she's ever done, because I even saw some clips come through my TikTok where it's like, wow, she's being so rude, and I felt like it was actually just a normal interview and she seemed fine, but it's like she's under the microscope in a major way because of the press tour, because of her being rude on the press tour, and now because of this interview where it is like really hard to watch the interview with the Norwegian journalist. But now we get into this mini narrative phase four, which is, but maybe fuck Justin too. So the narrative is pretty squarely in Justin Baldoni's court at this point, but then it comes out that he has hired crisis PR manager Melissa Nathan of the agency group, which is the same crisis PR manager who represented Johnny Depp during the Amber Heard trial. So then some people are like, it's kind of gross for him to hire the PR crisis manager who absolved a domestic abuser for your film about domestic abuse. But I will still say that the narrative still remains pretty squarely anti-Blake. It just puts like a ding against Justin Baldoni when people realize that he has hired this particular crisis PR manager.
But I hear that him having Melissa Nathan and Kirstie Flaw of it all is related. Of like, they dug that up. Melissa Nathan dug that up. You know what I mean? As a pro-Justin thing. I don't know.
My feeling about the Melissa Nathan of it all is I feel like it's the same as hiring a lawyer. Like, you kind of just want the best. And these people will work for anybody. I think that maybe it's not the best, like, narratively to hire Johnny Depp's PR crisis manager? Maybe not, but at the end of the day, I think that Justin Baldoni saw the writing on the wall. He saw what Blake Lively was trying to do. He saw where the narrative was going. He saw that she was leaking this shit to Page Six about him fat shaming her and lingering in a kiss. And he saw people being like, oh, clearly everyone hates Justin. And I think that he was smart enough to be like, I'm not going to go down like that. And he hired this lady. And I think it is impossible to extract the PR teams of both people from all the stuff that has come out from both people. I think Blake's PR team was going hard at the beginning to try to make the narrative against him. And then I think he said, well, look who I have. I'm hiring this lady and we're going to see what goes down. And I think he hired one hell of a crisis PR manager. That's for fucking sure.
Yeah. It's also important to note that like Justin Baldoni's whole image from his Jane the Virgin fame, like he has a lot of stuff about breaking down toxic masculinity. Yeah. Whether you think it's corny or not, like, that's his brand. His brand is anti-domestic violence, talking to men about abuse, all of that stuff. He has a podcast. He has round tables where he talks to men about consent and all this stuff. Like, he also backs a lot of, like, he's trying to get into the space of doing, like, positive stuff. We have a friend named Claire Yube who wrote a screenplay called Empire Waste, which is coming out in the end of September, about like a fat girl who like gains confidence through making clothes. And Justin Baldoni was an exec producer of it. Like, he's backing things that empower women, empower people. He's so, I could see it, it's not like he's just some regular guy. Like, he put, and again, whether Colleen Hoover is bad or not or whatever, like, the fact that he's an actor trying to do like a story about domestic violence, like, not a lot of actors are doing that. So, like, I could see the skin is in the game for him. And the, you know, the fact that he was on Message and stuff, it's not just about this thing. It's like his whole fucking brand is that he's a good person. And I could see one person harming the brand or one incident harming the brand would be dire for him. So,
yeah, I think Blake Lively miscalculated in a massive way and kind of played with the wrong one, because actually, going back to her not really understanding feminist issues, the discourse that is being had, I think that she just thought, well, he's the man and I'm the woman and I can spin this and I can do whatever. And it's like, well, actually, Justin Baldoni is actually really educated about these issues. Yeah. And he actually, like, understands the conversation as it stands today in 2024. And you don't. And you, like, are actually not up to date on any... I think you... She literally has this view of, like, feminism is I'm a woman, and so everyone should like everything that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that she also was like, well, he can't compete with the star power of me and my star husband. Mm-hmm. And we're going to push him out of his own movie and we're going to make him look bad and he's not going to be able to do anything about it. But actually, she messed with someone who, again, is educated about these issues. Mm-hmm. Saw the writing on the wall and was like, absolutely fucking not. I'm not going to let you do this to me.
And I think that's like a conversation that is had all the time with like even female Republican politicians or even Latin, whatever. It's just like, or even Black politicians, like how the right thought that everyone was going to get a, behind, what's his name? Walker. Like the Republican guy.
The one in Georgia.
Yeah, or just like
guy.
Yeah, the football player guy or Nikki Haley of like, well, she's a woman. And it's like, actually, it doesn't matter if the, you know, if the person's a woman or is Black or is gay or anything, if they don't actually take steps to back it up. Like, it doesn't matter that Nikki Haley's a woman. If she doesn't believe in abortion, she's not feminist.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that Blake Lively just like very much misunderstood this. And honestly, it's so funny to me because it is one of those things where it's like, if she had just played nice on this press tour and not done this weird unfollowing of him, posed for the fucking pictures and just kept it cute, I don't think any of this intense scrutiny would have come her way. Maybe the stuff about how the movie was being marketed would have still happened. But this like complete drudging up of her past and past interviews, like she should have just kept it cute.
Yeah.
Is on the press tour and like played nice because people notice this type of shit now. But I also feel like her and Ryan Reynolds kind of straddle this like old and new school of celebrity that I think they thought just their A-list status and their star power and their own PR firms would be enough. And it's like, no, TikTok can get the scent of something.
Yeah.
And you don't control the narrative once that happens. Like your PR, you don't. So that brings us to narrative phase five, what I'm calling the slow fade. So Lively and Baldoni have said nothing publicly about what has been going on. As of this weekend, Blake just had a giant birthday party at Taylor Swift's mansion in Rhode Island. So she seems to be just trying to slow fade the entire thing. Cast member Brandon Sklenar, who we talked about, who played Atlas, posted an IG post 5 days ago that read, "Hey, everyone, I want to take a minute to address all this stuff swirling online. Colleen and the women of this cast stand for hope, perseverance, and for women choosing a better lives for themselves. Vilifying the women who put so much of their heart and soul into making this film because they believe so strongly in its message seems counterproductive and detracts from what this film is about. It is, in fact, the opposite of the point. What may or may not have happened behind the scenes does not and hopefully should not detract from what our intentions were in making this film. It's been disheartening to see the amount of negativity being projected online. Someone very close to me has been struggling with a relationship that has mirrored Lily's closely. I feel a responsibility to bring this to life and to help spread that message further. Prior to my involvement in this film, she had not heard of the book. It was only then that she read it. She credits Colleen's book and subsequently this film with saving her life. Trust me when I tell you, there isn't a single person involved in the making of this film that was not aware of the responsibility we had in making it. A responsibility to all the women who have experienced generational trauma, domestic abuse, or struggle with looking in the mirror and loving who they see. This movie is a harsh reality check for the men who need to get their shit together and take responsibility for themselves and their actions. This film is meant to inspire. It's meant to validate and recognize. It's meant to instill hope. It's meant to build courage and help people feel less alone. Ultimately, it's meant to spread love and awareness. It's not meant to once again make the women the, quote, bad guy. Let's move beyond that together. All I ask is that before you spread hate on the internet, ask yourself who it's helping. Ask yourself if your opinions are based in any fact or if you simply want to be part of something. Let's be part of something better together, part of a new story being written for women and all people everywhere. Lead with love and please be kind."
I roll. Yeah.
That's a whole lot of nothing to me because it's like, okay, people aren't just hating unceremoniously on the quote women of the film. People have valid criticisms of how this movie was marketed by Colleen Hoover and Blake Lively. And also, again, you guys should have all kept it cute at the premiere and acted nice and not made it so obvious to everyone that there was drama behind the scenes and none of this would have fucking happened. Why did you all mass unfollow the director?
Yeah, it's giving that Blake wanted to, like, get somebody on her side and get someone on her back. And this guy, Brandon, is like, no one's ever heard of him. And he's going to dance for the king and queen, which is Ryan and Blake. And the whole fucking letter is super condescending and stupid. Like, it's like as if anybody commenting on this doesn't care about domestic violence or doesn't understand the significance. And the whole, like, Colleen Hoover saved my friend's life. It's like, shut up. Like, I mean, whatever, I'm sure. But I'm also like, God, like, and also for it to be 5 days ago, like, it was just like when it was over. Yeah, it was all over. And then now you got it, like, pissed again. Like,
I know. Whatever. It seems like somebody wanted to get invited to Taylor Swift's mansion. Someone wanted an invite to Rhode Island. But it is, and again, it comes down to this, like, sort of infuriating through line of all this stuff with me is that people just think that feminism is never saying anything bad about a woman. And people had genuine critiques about the way this film was being marketed, given the subject matter. And people have genuine critiques of the source material and Colleen Hoover's writing in general and how domestic violence is portrayed. So, like, it's great that it helped your friend, and that's a valid
thing. We don't know who it is.
That's lovely, but the people who are making these critiques are women too. Like, women are allowed to have inter-woman dialogue about stuff like this, and for you to come through and just be like, wow, villainizing a woman yet again. It's like, no, actually, this very much started with people being like, clearly Justin Baldoni fucked up. And then people looked into it and were like, actually, no. Like, that's not where this was going. But to round it all out, it ends with us grossed over $100 million in its first 11 days at the domestic box office. That's really good. Baldoni has said he will not direct the sequel and hinted that Blake might take over that part of it. that's where the drama stands as of now. It's kind of crazy to me to think that they would star in the sequel together.
I know.
I know. I think there is a third one. I did not engage with that because the second one was like so, so bad that I was like, okay, I can't keep doing this. But yeah, it is strange to me that I'm like, it made enough money for them to make the sequel, and it feels like they're leaving money on the table to not make the sequel. But it's also crazy to imagine that Justin Baldoni is going to be in the sequel with Blake Lively, because that is basically what the second one is about, is that she's trying to date this other guy while co-parenting with her former abuser who acts like he's okay now, but clearly is a fucked up person. Like, I just don't know how they do that.
Yeah, I mean, Blake probably is very pissed, but it would be like, it would make a lot of money and press if they could somehow get their shit together too. This is basically like a big band breakup. And it's like, if they could get together and like do another album and another tour, like it would be good, but who knows?
It'll certainly make a lot of money. So if that's what their goal is, they've got it. All right. It's time to move on to PolitiTikTok. We both brought a PolitiTikTok today.
Yeah.
So my PolitiTikTok is also accursed content. It is the video of JD Vance trying to order donuts at a donut shop in Georgia. Have you seen the video?
I've seen like some, you know, I try not to unmute JD Vance videos. But I'm aware of the donut video.
Let's watch it. This is it from Reddit in full.
Okay, yeah. She doesn't want to be on film, guys, so just cut her out of anything.
I appreciate that, man. I'm JD Vance, American Vice President. Good to see you.
Okay.
We're going to do 2 dozen.
Okay.
Yeah. We're just a, you know, random assortment of stuff here. How long are we working?
I'm here since the beginning of July.
Okay.
How is she?
I think so. How is she, so?
Almost 2 years.
Okay. Good. How long?
Seems to think.
Just every day. Yeah, I mean, a lot of glazed here, some sprinkle stuff, some extended rolls, whatever it says.
Yeah, if you don't want to be on film, then I'm
yeah.
If you don't want to be on film, you're okay.
So this was originally a C-SPAN video that got posted to Reddit, which we just watched the Reddit. I mean, there's so much about it that is so cringy. Number one, the woman immediately being like, I don't want to be filmed.
It's important to note that that woman was Black. So
Yeah,
that woman did not want to be on JD Vance's.
I think that woman knew exactly who the fuck he was and who was coming to town and was like, no, because I mean, nothing is funnier than him saying, I'm JD Vance, I'm running for vice president. And she goes, okay. I think that woman knew exactly who the fuck he was and was like, I want no part of this and I'm not going to play ball with you. And then he doesn't even order specific donuts. Like, it's so bizarre. It's like, I guess some sprinkle stuff. You got some glazed here. Just whatever.
In his defense, which I'm not even, whatever. But it's like, I love going to a place and be like, what's the most popular? Or what do people like? Or what do you like? He doesn't ask that. He's like, whatever makes sense. I guess some glaze, some sprinkles. And it's like, Jesus Christ, sir. You can't even, like, just no riz. Just no riz. Zero
no riz.
No riz
at all. And that's the thing is, it's like, it seemed very clear that they just wanted to be seen going into, like, a mom and pop shop and put no thought into, like, there is that very famous early Veep episode where they spend like the entire episode figuring out what flavor of ice cream she's going to order when she goes to the ice cream store. And I'm like, you needed a little bit of that. Like, you should come in and be like, do you have Boston cream? I love Boston cream. I'm a big glazed guy. My kids love sprinkles. Like, you should have something.
Yeah. Or like, you're in Georgia. So like, well, to contrast this to the Tim Walz Runza thing of like, he went to, which I had never heard of a Runza until the Tim Walz thing, because I have no knowledge of the Midwest, but it's like, He went to this specialty store that only exists in Nebraska, and he got this special Nebraska food. So if you're going to go, you're going to be like, oh my God, what is the Georgia specialty, or what's the specialty of this town? Oh, what, you know what I mean? Just like no thought.
And it's just like, nobody here wants to talk to you. Like no. You got, I'm sure there's some fucking Republican donut shop you can go to where they're going to at least look happy to see you. Like,
exactly.
Did you go in here? This woman doesn't even want to be filmed. Yeah. Why are you filming when everyone doesn't even want to be filmed?
Yeah, call ahead. There's some racist Republican donut shop. There has to be. And you would have
loved to see JD Vance in there. There's got to be one.
Take a picture with you, put it on their wall. They're fucking flipping out.
Yeah, but it seems like they just picked any random donut shop, walked in. He had not considered what type of donut he likes. They didn't call ahead to see if anyone working there would have any interest in this. And the result is this very cringy video. Now, Millie, you have a PolitiTikTok, and I would love to hear it as well.
Yes. So the next thing is thanks to @NikkiMCR, Nikki McCain Ramirez, a politics writer for the Rolling Stone. And this is all about Trump's meltdown. During Kamala Harris's DNC speech, the Democratic National Convention, which was taking place last week, it went for multiple days. And during her big speech at the end to like kind of round off the convention, Trump was live truthing, which is not tweeting. He was on Truth Social, live truthing during her speech and ended up posting 47 times.
47 times.
47 times, 47 truths. So as Kamala Harris is on stage giving this speech about what she plans to do, what she wants to do, what, you know, all this stuff, he's truthing. This is one truth. Is she talking about me? The answer is yes. She clearly says Donald Trump multiple times. Like, what are you talking about? At the beginning of the speech, she talks about like her background. Trump goes, a lot of talk about childhood. We got to get to the border, inflation, and crime. And it's like, okay, sir, the speech is 35 minutes. I'm sure she's going to get to it.
Yeah.
You fucking weirdo.
And also, the purpose of this speech is to introduce herself as the candidate.
Yeah,
and
he
has an inspiring backstory. Your backstory is not inspiring to anyone. So
it's like my grandfather was at a KKK rally in 1936.
My father was fined for not renting to Black people. And then I became rich and I've gone bankrupt a bunch of times.
Yeah. So, of course, he's going to talk about border inflation and crime. Then he says Walz was an assistant coach, not a coach. And to that I say, that's still a coach.
It is so funny how desperate they are to say anything bad about Tim Walz, and like all of it reads as so weird.
It's weird.
It's weird.
Then too many thank yous, because at the beginning of the speech, the crowd was so boisterous and so that Kamala couldn't even get a word in. Yeah. So she kept being like, thank you, guys, thank you. Trump was like, too many thank yous, too rapidly said, what's going on with her? And then finally, my favorite is that Kamala caused the attack of October 7th, which is fucking insane.
That's one I've never heard.
Heard that either. He then is so mad that he calls into Fox News and he's so pissed that as he's talking, he's like accidentally pushing buttons. So let's hear the 10-second clip of him on Fox News.
He's in taxes. He's going to give a tax increase of 4 to 5 times what people and companies are paying right now.
Accidentally pressing buttons is how you know a boomer is raging into their phone. Like, he can't,
he's raging, he's pissed.
He's raging.
Then Fox News cut him off, because Fox News had to end that portion of the night to get into their show Gutfield. So he goes into Newsmax, he calls Newsmax and says, hey, you know what, we should all go to Venezuela and see how socialism works out there. Like, completely insane. And then calls back to Fox and interrupts Gutfield's hard-hitting satirical comedy.
It is very funny for him to call into Gutfield. I feel like that's not Because that's their like fake daily show that's not funny. Yeah. And that's always hiring. And that anytime you pipe in like comedy job NYC, it's like you could work for Gutfield. And I'm like, yeah. I guess I could. Yeah.
No, thank you. But Trump is not.
He's not feeling good about his chances.
He's not feeling good about his chances. Apparently, he's been playing a lot of golf, but that's our political TikTok.
And now is it time?
Grass hole of the week. So today's grass hole, it's a complicated story. It's a story about someone who was a grass hole, and then a story about grass heroes, and then a story about redemption.
That's beautiful. And for anyone tuning in for the first time, a grass hole is the person that we declare needs to log off the most.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a grass hero is someone who has used the internet perfectly.
Yeah.
And must be celebrated.
Yes. So it all starts with a mixed martial arts fighter by the name of Ronda Rousey.
I know of her.
She's pretty famous. The event, a little event that took place at Sandy Hook Elementary School.
I'm aware of the event as well.
Well, if you don't know, if you're not aware, there was a tragic mass shooting on December 14th, 2012 at Sandy Hook Elementary. It was a school in Newton, Connecticut, which left 20 children and 6 staff members dead. All right? So that was December 14th, 2012. In January 2013, Ronda Rousey reposted a controversial video from the YouTube channel Think Outside the TV, which highlighted a conspiracy theory about the shooting. Specifically, the video questions the official narrative of that day of Newton, Connecticut, right? It's just saying that, like, this is not true. Like, the government, it's a government conspiracy to scare us.
The false flag shit, like, kind of like what Alex Jones was saying and stuff.
Exactly what Alex Jones was saying.
People say it didn't actually happen. And
so one specific instance of that is, you know, it was an alarming recrimination against the victim of the tragedy. On the video, like, one of the things the video did was poke holes in Dave Rosen's story. Rosen was a 69-year-old retired psychologist who found 6 little children and a bus driver at the end of the driveway of his home in Newton, Connecticut. He lived like near the school. They said to him, "We can't go back to school." One little boy told Rosen, "Our teacher is dead." Rosen then brought the children inside and gave them food and juice and toys. He called their parents and sat with the children and listened to their shocked accounts of what had happened just down the street inside Sandy Hook Elementary. Close enough that Rosen heard the gunshots from his house. So Rosen after did press about the incident in the hours and days that followed. He did a lot of interviews and he said, quote, "I wanted to speak about the bravery of the children and it kind of helped me work through this," he told Salon. He said, "I guess I kind of opened myself up to what happened after." And what happened after was that he was getting a lot of prank calls, a lot of hang-up calls. He's getting called, like, emails, non-direct threats, and accusations that he's lying, that he was a crisis actor, how much he's being paid. People posted photos of his home outside online. There have been phony Google Plus, hello 2013, Google Plus and YouTube accounts created in his name, messages on white supremacist message boards ridiculing, quote, "the emotional Jewish guy," and dozens of blog posts and videos, quote, exposing him as a fraud. One email purporting to be a business inquiry taunted, "How are all those little students doing? You know, the ones that showed up at your house after the, quote, shooting? What's the going rate for getting involved in a government-sponsored hoax anyways?" So that's the result of the video that Ronda Rousey shared. That video had nearly 9 million YouTube views, like, less than a week later after it was posted. In the post, so Ronda retweets this video, shares it, and writes, quote, "extremely interesting and a must-watch video."
That's very much how, like, Elon Musk will retweet, like, fucking, exactly, like, white supremacist stuff and be like, "interesting to consider." And it's
interesting,
like,
to consider.
Is it?
Yes. So it's important to note that as of today, 2024, the video has since been taken down and that account no longer exists, probably because they were sharing Sandy Hook conspiracy videos. A lot of that shit has been demonetized and off, right? But clearly the post was met with overwhelming anger and criticism from the general public. In an attempt to douse the flames, Rousey deleted the video and stated in a follow-up post that at Bloodstained Lane thinks, I just figure asking questions and doing research is more patriotic than blindly accepting what you're told. So
funny to me to be like, I don't blindly accept what I'm told. I believe everything that I saw in a single YouTube video. Like what?
Yeah.
Like that is blindly accepting the most random shit in the world. But people are like, no, you shouldn't listen to what news sources tell you or what multiple interviews and multiple different people and yes, the government tell you happened. It's actually smarter to believe a random YouTube video that you saw.
This is why she's grasshole. She was grasshole because she was posting through it. She doubled down. Again, very grasshole behavior. Grassholish behavior. A few days later, after much like of her getting dragged, she posted an apology. So basically her manager is like, listen, she didn't mean any disrespect with Sandy Hook. And then, you know, she posted an apology. Was like, sorry to anyone who I offended. That wasn't my intention. That's what she posted. And the manager said she didn't mean any disrespect. Social media outlets and message boards lit up after that tweet, with some fans decrying Rousey's tact and others suggesting she was simply trying to stir up controversy. Several hours later, Rousey removed that apology in general.
Okay.
So that's what happened in 2013. So just to recap, Sandy Hook happens. She retweeted this conspiracy theory video that was extremely dangerous. It caused a lot of people to get harassed, caused people to like have real serious doubts about this tragedy. Then when people like dragged her for it, she was like, look, I just want to get to the facts and research or whatever. She gets dragged again. She posts like a really shitty apology. Her manager tries to whatever. And then she just deletes it, right? That happened in 2013. A lot's happened since 2013, right? Ronda went on to be a top fighter in the UFC. She went on to be a wrestler in the WWE. She got married and had a child out of her own. So a lot of things has happened, you know?
Mm-hmm. Everything has happened since 2013 in many
everything
ways.
Everything has happened since
absolutely everything.
I know. Jesus Christ. So the thing about the internet is that it lasts forever, though, and people don't forget. So on August 20th of this year, Ronda Rousey took to Reddit to promote a Kickstarter for her graphic novel. And the way that she promoted it was by doing an Ask Me Anything. And Ask Me Anything is a thing that people will do on Reddit specifically. And it typically lasts a few hours. And it's basically like this way of like, hey, Ronda Rousey will, you know, or like X person, I think Josh Whedon, like a bunch of people, especially in like the nerdier spaces, will get on it and be like, you can ask me anything you want and I'll answer for the next 2-3 hours. And it's a good way to promote like, you know, like, again, get that authenticity, that connection, and promote your project and stuff. Again, Rhonda's promoting a Kickstarter for a graphic novel, and she did an Ask Me Anything. And, well, her Ask Me Anything went exactly as how you thought it was. What ended up happening was a bunch of questions like the following. OG Jimmy P says, in your graphic novel, expecting the unexpected, will we see something unexpected, like you apologizing or acknowledging the families of the victims of the Sandy Hook massacre, where 20 children were ruthlessly gunned down? Talked about expecting the unexpected. Can't wait to read the book. Somebody else said, I heard rumors that WWE had pitched an angle to repackage you as a pirate character, the descendant of a well-known swashbuckler. Supposedly you shot this down. Did you deny it because your gimmick was going to be the Sandy Hook?
Oh my God.
Have you ever considering apologizing to the Sandy Hook parents? It's a lot of that stuff. Did you plan on firing your team for this PR team for this dumpster fire? Or will you see this as a sign that you have a lot of personal growth to do? Do you concede that the Sandy Hook tragedy actually occurred? Any remorse or grief for your tweet? may have caused. And then my favorite is at Killer is Jed. Do you think someone that takes punches to the head for a living should be making public statements about mass shootings of children? That was one of my favorites.
That's a great question, Killer is Jed. That's a great question.
It got so bad that she wrapped the AMA early. I just want to acknowledge the grass heroes of Reddit. You know, yeah. Cyberbullying is wrong, but sometimes you can do it for something right.
Yeah.
And this was a moment where, you know, you did the right thing.
Yeah. Because denying Sandy Hook is actually one of the most vile and fucked up conspiracy theories that you can engage in. And it's like the exact shit. I mean, Alex Jones is like in mega debt now because he has to pay the Sandy Hook family's gazillions of dollars. And like, it really is just some of the worst shit that the internet has ever produced. So it's an example of something where, like, I don't care how long ago it was. You do have to fully account for why the fuck you would share a video saying that Sandy Hook didn't actually happen.
Well, Elise, thank you, because now we have on August 23rd, her apology. I'm going to read it and then we'll talk about if it's good or not. I can't say how many times I've redrafted this apology over the last 11 years. How many times I convinced myself it wasn't the right time or that I'd be causing even more damage by giving it. But 11 years ago, I made the single most regrettable decision of my life. I watched a Sandy Hook conspiracy video and reposted it on Twitter. I didn't even believe it, but I was so horrified at the truth that I was grasping for an alternative fiction to cling to instead. I quickly realized my mistake and took it down, but the damage was done. By some miracle, it seemingly slipped under the media's radar. I was never asked about it, so I never spoke of it again, afraid that calling attention to it would have the opposite of the intended effect. It would increase the views of those conspiracy videos and selfishly inform even more people I was ignorant, self-absorbed, and tone-deaf enough to share one in the first place. I drafted an 1,000th apology to include in my last memoir, but my publisher begged me to take it out, saying that it would overshadow everything else and do more harm than good. So I convinced myself that apologizing would just reopen the wound for no other reason than me selfishly trying to make myself feel better, that I would hurt those suffering even more and possibly lead more down the black hole of conspiracy bullshit by it being brought up again, just so I could shake the label of being a Sandy Hook truther. But honestly, I deserve to be hated, labeled, detested, and resented, and worse for it. I deserve to lose out on every opportunity. I should have been canceled. I would have deserved it. I still do. I apologize that this came 11 years too late, but to those affected by the Sandy Hook massacre, from the bottom of my heart and the depth of my soul, I am so, so sorry for the hurt I caused. I can't even begin to imagine the pain you've endured, and words cannot describe how thoroughly remorseful and ashamed I am for myself contributing to it. I've regretted it every day of my life since and will continue to do so until the day I die. And to anyone else that's fallen down the black hole of bullshit, it doesn't make you edgy or an independent thinker. You're not doing your due diligence, entertaining every possibility by digesting these conspiracies. They will only make you feel powerless, afraid, miserable, and isolated. You're doing nothing but hurting others and yourself. Regardless of how many bridges you've burned over it, stop digging yourself a deeper hole. Don't get wrapped up in the sunk cost fallacy. No matter how long you've gone down the wrong road, you should still turn back.
Wow. I think that was, I mean, well done. It feels genuine to me. I mean, obviously, again, as we've talked about with all these apologies, sometimes the consequence is people just don't fuck with you no matter what. And I get if you feel that way, but I do really like the last sentence that's like, if you've fallen down the black hole of this bullshit, like, it's never too late to stop falling. I think that is important.
Yeah. And like, I think that the grass heroes, again, without the grass heroes, we would have never got this. And this is such a powerful apology of, like, you know, it's also like, it's not making excuses, but it's like, it does make you understand, like, look, I thought, you know, I've always felt this, but I thought that if it would be worse if I brought it up. And also, like, it's that whole thing that you're saying where people do feel like they are being like the true thinkers and true whatever if they don't digest everything that comes to them. But in fact, like, you're just hurting people and you're just isolating yourself further. Yeah, so I just really liked this apology and I thought it was great. And it was like all because of our grass heroes. And
yeah,
even if you're a grasshole, you can come back from it.
I feel like something she did right is she spent less time on the like, this is why I believed this or whatever. And I thought it was way more interesting to hear about, like, I kept talking myself out of making this apology and was told to, like, by her publisher not to include it in her book. And like this feeling of, oh God, if I drudge it up again, what does it mean? And I feel like that's a lot more interesting of a route to explore than if she had just been like, I just was dumb then, but I'm better now. And I like that she was light on that and heavy on the, I really should have done this sooner and I didn't because I was afraid and I kept being told not to, but like, I should, this is, again, she says it's 11 years too late, but like, I was wrong.
And I'm just thinking about that as we were talking about Blake Lively and like, you know, now people like that publisher advice, like it is very old Hollywood and old things of, you know, oh, everyone, we control the narrative, everyone will forget. And it's like now the internet and now the public demands different things and we're all like communicating and relating to each other in different ways. So you can't just forget something as bad as, you know, like, of course, if again, it's something different if somebody was like slut shaming somebody, you know, because that is something that the culture has moved on, slut shaming. But so, like, if so, you don't have to apologize for that because we collectively, or maybe saying something insensitive about Britney Spears, like even though the culture has collectively moved away from that, like you don't need penance for that. But something as horrific as denying
Sandy Hook is really bad. Like
it's
really bad. And it is like funny that, yeah, this fucking like old school thinking of this publisher to be like, no, don't put that in your book. It'll overshadow the rest of the book. And it's like, maybe it should. And also like, maybe more books will sell if this is in the book. And like, actually hearing her line of thinking just in this small post, like I would actually love a chapter of her reflections in her book. That's like, I really fucked up and I did a really bad thing and like this is how it all went down and my experience and da da da, like that old school thinking from the publisher. And to bring it back to our full discourse, the old school thinking of like Blake Lively's PR team, it doesn't fly in the days where TikTok people can drudge up all your old interviews and watch them and watch them in succession and like come up with a narrative for themselves. It doesn't fly when you can do a Reddit ask me anything and people, regular people who remember what you did, can ask you anything.
Especially because, you know, Alex Jones has gone bankrupt and all this shit, but like all of that is very recently, you know, like all of that shit is very recent. And not to give her like, you know, give her a break, Ronda Rousey is 37 now, so 11 years ago she was 26. Like, again, not, she's still an adult, she know, she should know better, but also like, you know, a 26 year old like MMA fighter, like I'm not expecting like the smartest, most nuanced person, so I can't imagine there's growth there too. So I don't know, that this story like really stuck with me because it was just such a, it was one of those things that I was like, oh my God, that's so funny when they were like bullying her. And then to see this apology is like, yeah, this was really good.
Yeah, a grasshole to hero story, I think, is an important thing for us to explore here on the pod.
Yeah, and I just love, again, like, speaking specifically to that, you're not an independent thinker if you like, don't trust the New York Times, but trust a fucking YouTuber.
Yeah, exactly. You are not someone who doesn't question, who, like, questions everything and, like, whatever. If a random YouTube video is more persuasive to you than like every journalist in the world and actual real people and real grave sites that have little kids in them. Like, come on.
Yeah. Well,
I love a grasshole to hero story, and I think that that's wonderful. And that's the end of our pod for today. Yes. We really went into it. It's good we to really do just did. Two of us. I feel we like really we can get should. Into many topics.
Yeah, we could get into a lot more, and we're definitely going to be getting into it with the Azalea Banks. I'm really excited for it because to anyone who says, are you not capable of separating the art from the artist? I'm like, wait till you hear about my opinions of Azalea Banks.
And you can hear all of that on our Patreon. We've got tons of content on our Patreon. So if you want to hear more from us, it's all there. And until next time,
go touch grass.
That was a HeadGum podcast.